Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Utside yur ime loka.
Utside yur ime loka.
Na kuryam karma chidaham.
Na kuryam karma chidaham.
Sankarasya chakartasya.
Sankarasya chakartasya.
Upahanyam imak praja.
Upahanyam imak praja.
Utside yur ime loka.
Utside yur ime loka.
Na kuryam karma chidaham.
Na kuryam karma chidaham.
Sankarasya chakartasyam.
Sankarasya chakartasyam.
Upahanyam imak praja.
Upahanyam imak praja.
Chit. If. Aham.
I.
Sankarasya.
Sankarasya.
Of unwanted population.
Of unwanted population.
Cha.
And.
Karta, creator, Siam, would be, Upahanyam,
would destroy,
Imah,
all these,
Praja,
living entities.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. If I did not perform prescribed duties, all these worlds would be put to ruination. I would be the cause of creating unwanted population, and I would thereby destroy the peace of all living beings. Purport. Varna Sankara is unwanted population, which disturbs the peace of the general society. In order to check this social disturbance, there are prescribed rules and regulations by which the population can automatically become peaceful and organized for spiritual progress in life. When Lord Sri Krishna descends, naturally he deals with such rules and regulations in order to maintain the prestige and necessity of such important performances. The Lord is the Father of all living entities, and if the living entities are misguided, indirectly, the responsibility goes to the Lord. Therefore, whenever there is general disregard of regulative principles, the Lord Himself descends and corrects the society. We should, however, note carefully that although we have to follow in the footsteps of the Lord, we still have to remember that we cannot imitate Him. Following and imitating are not on the same level. We cannot imitate the Lord by lifting Govardhan Hill, as the Lord did in His childhood. It is impossible for any human being. We have to follow His instructions, but we may not imitate Him at any time. The Srimad Bhagavatam 10:33-31 affirms, Naitat samachare jatu manasapi hyanishvaraha vinashyat yacharan mauryad yatarudro didap bijam visham Ishwaranam vachat satyam tataiva choritam kvachit tesham yat swavacho yuktam burimangs tat samacharit. One should simply follow the instructions of the Lord and His empowered servants. Their instructions are all good for us. And any intelligent person will perform them as instructed. However, one should guard against trying to imitate their actions. One should not try to drink the ocean of poison in imitation of Lord Shiva. We should always consider the position of the Ishwaras, or those who can actually control the movements of the sun and moon, as superior. Without such power, one cannot imitate the Ishwaras, who are super powerful. Lord Shiva drank poison to the extent of swallowing an ocean. But if any common man tries to drink even a fragment of such poison, he will be killed. There are many pseudo-devotees of Lord Shiva who want to indulge in smoking ganja, marijuana, and similar intoxicating drugs, forgetting that by so imitating the acts of Lord Shiva, they are calling death very near. Similarly, there are some pseudo-devotees of Lord Krishna who prefer to imitate the Lord in his Rasa Leela, or Dance of Love, forgetting their inability to lift Govardhan Hill. It is best, therefore, that one not try to imitate the powerful, but simply follow their instructions. Nor should one try to occupy their posts without qualification. There are many so-called incarnations of God without the power of the Supreme Godhead. Therefore, Krishna wants to set an example. If in general what the best man does is going to be followed by the general populace, we see that's a tendency, very universal tendency. Otherwise, why is everybody so interested in what the politicians are doing? Why are most of Indian newspapers, almost everything in the papers about your local politicians and what they're up to, what they're doing? It must be that there's a great interest in power. That just because a man is powerful, he's interesting. He's to be taken seriously, just because he's powerful. Because I don't see anything very attractive in these people. They don't seem like very good people, these politicians. I don't see any virtue in them. Not much. They seem to be squabbling, I won't call them names, but they're, I don't consider them very good people. But they're so interesting. Everybody wants to know what they're doing every day. From day to day, you got to know what each of the politicians are doing to each other. So there must be a great interest in power for the sake of power. Someone is respected because he's Ishvara. He's got power to control. Therefore, he's an important man. VIP. So, that's good. It's not wrong that we should respect the great Ishwaras, but who is a real Ishwara? Not just someone who can manipulate votes or has some control over some money or some other leverage of power. Prabhupada says a real controller is someone who can move the sun and the moon. Who can do that? Not anybody of the human race that I know of, even scouring the history books. You won't find any human being, even in ancient history, with such power. Pandavas are about as powerful as a human being can get. Even they were not moving the sun and the moon. Even Bhima was not doing that. I think, Hanuman did catch the sun, didn't he, when he was a baby? Okay, that's an exception, but that was 2 million years ago. But as far as in the last 5,000 years among the human, he wasn't a human being anyway. He was a Kimpurusha. You may call him a monkey, but actually he comes from the Kim Purusha race, who occupy the middle heaven, the Antariksha region, they're superhuman. They're not just monks, they're not subhuman, they're superhuman, the Kim Purushas. So even Hanuman doesn't count, because he's not a human being. But his brother Bhima, you don't read about him. You know, they say he was more powerful than 10,000 elephants. Okay, maybe he could kill Rakshasas with his bare hands. That's pretty powerful. But it doesn't say that he could make the sun and the moon move according to his will. That is not claimed, even for Bhima. And who else? Who is more powerful among the human beings? So it's superhuman power to be able to move the sun and the moon. Someone's doing it. We recognize that this is Suryadev, who's moving the sun. The sun is being driven in his chariot around the sky every day. Suryadev, if you accept the Vedic version, there's your answer. One person moves the sun, Suryadev. Another person moves and controls the moon, Chandradev. We consider these real people. And they're superhuman people. They have much greater power than we have. No human being can do what they do. What they do is an ordinary day-to-day occupational duty. What they do is impossible for any human being. And they are also called Vibhuta, superhuman in intelligence. They have much vaster wisdom and much more information than we have. A man may have enough information to do his job as president of a corporation, which might be a lot of information. But a demigod, even a minor bureaucratic, cog in the bureaucratic wheel of the demigods, some minor demigod, he's got the intelligence and the power to control his little department, but all over the universe. He may be the controlling deity of the small finger, the pinky, but he's controlling every pinky, every single small finger in the universe. That requires a lot of controlling power and a lot of intelligence. But all that intelligence originally comes from the Supreme Person. And all that power comes from Him. The demigods are simply granted some small fraction of Krishna's power and Krishna's intelligence. Janmadyasya yaton vayad itaratas charteshu abhigyakswarat. This is definition of God. It is taken from it is the first line of Srimad Bhagavatam. The very first verse, the very first line. And it is actually based on a shorter statement that is the second sutra of the Vedanta. Janmadyasya yataha. Brahman, or the absolute truth, is the source of the creation, maintenance, and destruction of this whole universe, this whole creation. Srimad Bhagavatam, in its first verse, takes those words and expands a little bit on them. Janmadyasya yaton vayat itaratas charteshu abhigyakswarat, and then says more, but that's the first line. That from which everything is born, everything is maintained, and everything is destroyed in the end. Abhigyak and Surat. But he has two special qualities by which he does this. How can he be the source of everything? How can everything be maintained by this one person? And how can he be the one into which everything returns when it's destroyed? How can he be all that? Because he's Abhigyak and Surat. He's all-knowing and all-powerful. omniscient, omnipotent. He knows everything. He has all power to do anything. And how does he manage that? He must be pretty busy. He must be distracted, paying attention to everything at once, and having to do everything at once. He can if he wants. He can. He can do everything at once, and will be aware of everything at once. He's God. But also he has his agencies, his energies, who act on his behalf. So he doesn't have to pay attention to everything. He delegates the knowing and the controlling to his energies and his servants, the demigods, and the sages. The rishis are in charge of knowing everything. You know, we get knowledge from the rishis. Krishna deposits knowledge in them, the great rishis, and they share the knowledge with us. That's how knowledge descends from the Supreme Lord. And when it comes to controlling power, that he deposits in the devatas, the demigods, like Indra, Surya, Chandra, Vayu, and the others. The controlling power comes from God, but he delegates it to the demigods. And then whatever human being is powerful gets it from the demigods. We, if we have any power, we're getting it from Krishna's representatives. And that is basically the demigods. But so Krishna, therefore it said, Anvayad itarateshu cha abhigyakswarat. He's knowing everything and controlling everything, both directly and indirectly. Anvaya means indirectly. Anvaya means indirection. No. By some intermediary, through an agent, not directly. Itarata means otherwise. So indirectly and otherwise. Or turn it around, it's directly and directly and indirectly. He's directly and indirectly knowing everything and controlling everything. That is God. By himself he does it, and through his agents he does it. So there's Ishvara. He's Parameshvara, the supreme controller. How can we begin to imitate? How can we dare to imitate the supreme controller? We can't do many of the things. We cannot begin to try to do many of the things that he does as this play, as his leela. Not even with great effort, effortlessly. He does so many things that we cannot even imagine doing. And still we want to imitate God. We want to claim that we are also God. Everybody is God. If you can't create the universe, if you cannot move the sun and the moon, and really do it, not just hallucinate, and you know, smoke some intoxicant and think that you're moving the sun and the moon. No, you're not. Now, when you fall into a drunken stupor, what happens? The sun and the moon stop then? You know, because you've fallen unconscious in your intoxication. Now the sun is eclipsed or has to stop. Unfortunately, the movement of the sun and the moon doesn't depend on you. It's taken care of by God and by his agents. So how can we imitate either him or the demigods? How can we imitate? How can we,
what Prabhupada calls usurp their position. One should not try. One should not try to imitate the powerful, but simply follow their instructions. Nor should one try to occupy their posts without qualification. You can become a demigod if you really want to, if you work for it. You can become Lord Brahma if you execute your prescribed duty for 100 lifetimes without any deviation. Don't make any mistakes for 100 lifetimes. Then you can become promoted to the position of Lord Brahma. If you want it, you can have it. You can become a demigod up to Lord Brahma. But you can't become God. The best you can do, a jiva can become Lord Brahma if he wants a universal become Parameshti, to sit on the highest seat. Parameshti, sitting on the highest seat. Everybody wants a high chair. So the highest chair is the chair, he's the supreme chairman of the universe, Lord Brahma, sitting in the biggest chair. You can become Lord Brahma if you want. It can be done. But you can't go any higher than that. You can't become Lord Shiva. He's not a jiva. And you can't become Vishnu, the Supreme Lord. That position is already filled, and you can't have it. The Vaishnavas do not, even the Vaishnava sannyasis, we do not address them Om Namo Narayanaya. We never claim that a jiva, or we deny that a jiva can ever become Narayana, or God. And nor will you find that in the bona fide scriptures, any statement that jiva can become Narayana. Nor can Narayana become finite. This idea of Daridra Narayana, poor Narayan. We have to do service to the poor because they are Narayan. The poor are Narayan, Daridra Narayan. Narayan in the form of the poor. What nonsense. God doesn't become a poor beggar. He's God. He's the possessor of everything. How can he become poor? Daridra Narayan. So this is an offensive idea, and it is not found in the authentic Shastras, such an idea, that God becomes limited, or that the limited can become God. Impossible. So better we don't try to imitate. Even if we can become a demigod, we're not one now. No. Don't try to occupy their post without qualification. Okay, if you want to bother to get the qualification, then you can try for the post of a demigod, if that's really your intention and desire. But not without qualification. You cannot claim to occupy their position. And the position of God, no finite creature can ever occupy. But God still wants to set an example. Even though he can claim, I'm God, and I can do whatever I want, and don't try to imitate me. Do what I say, not what I do. But that's okay. A mature adult should be able to understand that. But when you're dealing with children, and a parent tells the child, do what I say and not what I do, the children don't really like that too much. They see inconsistency in that. Children are not stupid. You tell your child, if you ever smoke cigarettes, I'll beat you. But the father's smoking cigarettes. So the child says, you're smoking, why can't I? I'm supposed to never smoke. Well, you've been smoking for so many years. You probably were smoking when you were 10 years old too. So the child sees this as hypocrisy. Do what I say and not what I do. If you want your son not to do something, you shouldn't do it. So Krishna knows that psychology. When you're dealing with children, it's more important than what you say is the example you set. They see what you're doing. They don't care what you're saying, children. So similarly, the childish conditioned souls, even though they should understand that God has privileges that we don't. He can do things that we cannot imitate. Still, he doesn't want us to get any wrong ideas. So therefore, he acts in an exemplary way. He doesn't act in such a way that if it was imitated, it would cause disturbance. He says, "Utsideyori me loka, na kuryam karma chedaham." If I didn't act dutifully, if I was irresponsible, Krishna says, then probably the whole world would go to hell. And especially, I would be the cause of unwanted population. And the term used here is Varna Sankara. Sankara is inappropriate mixing. Mixing can be done. I want to make payasam. then I mix the ingredients very carefully. You know, we put in some, I think cinnamon would be good, and some sugar, some milk, other ingredients, but they have to be in proper proportion. If someone gets the recipe wrong, you know, and it says, 2 kilos of cinnamon, you know, instead of 2 teaspoons, half a teaspoon, 2 kilos, then it will be inedible or poisonous. So proportion has to be proper. Otherwise, the recipe is becomes inedible. So mixing can be done. A good mixture is very palatable, but it has to be appropriate mixture in proper proportion. So population also. Not that the husband and the mother and father of a child have to be exactly of the same genetic combination. They don't have to be equals, but they have to be compatible. Generally, a father may be of a higher class than the man may be of higher class than the woman, and still the progeny will be good. If a Brahmin man marries a Kshatriya woman, that's allowable. Then the offspring will still be good. For example, the Nambudiri Brahmanas, they may have multiple wives. And generally, if their first wife is a Brahmin like them, then their second wife will be taken from the Kshatriya class. Third wife from the Vaishyas. That's how they have their second and third marriages. And then if you have sons by each, according to the strict Nambudiri regulations, if you have a son by your Kshatriya wife, you're a Brahmin, your second wife is a Kshatriya, then that son of your Kshatriya wife cannot eat, together with you, because he's half Kshatriya. Anyway, these rules are there. Different communities have different variations of the rules. But according to Dharma Shastras, there are improper mixtures. And the general principle is, if the woman is higher class than the man, that's against the grain. And the offspring is not good. That's the general principle that leads to Varna Sankara. Women, a higher class woman associating with lower class man. And then you have unwanted population, undesirable, not good progeny. And also, if Garbhadhan Samskara is not performed by the twice-born classes, then the children that are produced are not auspicious. And we see in modern times, people have sex for recreation, not for begetting progeny. They use contraception. They have sex when they have no intention of having a child. And then when there's a child, that child wasn't intended, wasn't wanted. Unwanted population. And it's so frequent in the modern times. It results from not performing the samskaras, not sanctifying the act of procreation. So the Garbhadhan samskara must be performed by the brahmanas, otherwise they're degraded. And nowadays they think in marriage they have a Garbhadhan ritual as part of the marriage, do it once. But that's not proper. That's not the proper samskara. That is just a poor substitute. Without that, then you have Varna Sankara. And Krishna is saying, I will be the fault of this. It'll be my fault. If I don't set an example how to behave, then people will become unruly. They'll ignore, in general, religious principles. And when you start getting the attitude that we don't have to be strict about what it says in the Shastras, this is old-fashioned stuff, we can ignore it. What do you think is the first thing you'll take advantage of? The opportunity to be lax in your regulation of sex. Loose sex is the first thing that people will try to indulge in. And intoxication, and meat eating. But the big opportunity that you've got when you drop your religiosity is you can have sex unrestrictedly. So Krishna is right to claim or to say that I'm going to be the cause of unwanted population if I show any laxity in being uprighteous and following religious principles. If I don't, then people will get the idea there's no need to be like, to be religious. And they will break the regulative principles. And eventually human society will become like a society of cats and dogs, which is the way that Prabhupada views our modern society. Kali Yuga has only been going on for 5,000 years. But in the view of a clear-visioned observer of our modern society, 5,000 years into Kali Yuga, according to Srila Prabhupada, this is a society, our worldwide human society, is now become a society of cats and dogs. You know, because we don't follow the regulative principles of the scripture anymore. Even the brahmanas don't do a very good job of following them. So Krishna is saying, you know, I have to set an example. Otherwise, things go to hell. And he's right. So Krishna will continue in the next verses, advising how the wise should behave, setting a good example, and not disturbing the minds of the innocent, but gradually directing them to becoming more purified and more proper in their following of Shastric injunctions. Hare Krishna. So are there any questions or comments? Yes.
Let's say, for example, someone drives his car and he falls asleep or
yes.
accident, and I mean, some demigod closed his eyes, whatever. So does it mean that demigods know everyone's, that demigod knows that person's karma, or some
yes.
higher energy controls the demigod who
well,
is obviously unconsciously just?
Well, someone has to be conscious of it. If the demigod that you're talking about, the one who's actually sitting at the monitor watching that human being drive the car, if he's ignorant, if he's only being controlled by higher force, then you were talking about some super demigod who's controlling this intermediate demigod. Somebody has to be conscious of it. You know, it doesn't go on. Everything doesn't go on. It's not machines controlling everything. It's living intelligence. Someone has to be aware, actually aware of everybody's karma. The karma is not calculated just by mechanics. It's not just mathematics and laws of nature. There's somebody, some intelligence behind those laws of nature. The laws of nature are just a measurement of what's going on. It's not like, you know, the law makes it happen. What we call a law of nature, law of science, is just a description of the status quo, of what is going on. Still doesn't answer, why is it going on? What makes it go on? What makes gravity happen? You can measure gravity. You can assign it a numerical, you know, dimension. You can say, you know, the force of gravity of the Earth is so many, you know, whatever, however you measure it. You know, acceleration. You know, it's a measurement of acceleration, how fast something will fall. And it doesn't matter how heavy the thing is. Yeah. All things will fall at a certain acceleration toward the center of the Earth. That's gravity. So you can describe it. It doesn't answer, why is there such a thing? What makes it happen? There's divine superhuman intelligence that makes things fall to the center of the Earth. That is Lord Sankarsana, actually. So his divine intelligence creates the law of gravity, or the force of gravity. And all physical forces, all psychological forces, have divine intelligence behind them that plan them and make them happen. There's no, you know, someone has to be aware of the karma of that living entity who falls asleep behind the wheel and has an accident. And calling it an accident is a misnomer. Nothing's accidental. The karma is already there. An astrologer could have told him 30 years ago, you're going to have an accident, if he's a good astrologer. And the demigods, they know, okay, today's the day for Mr. Sharma's car accident, let's set it up. They know it's coming. Somebody knows it. Somebody's aware of your karma. and is dispensing it. Whether, you know, maybe it's not this demigod, then there's someone above him, a higher demigod, who does know. That's the business of the demigods, to know what's going on all over the universe and keep it under control. Just like a manager in a company, he has to know what he's responsible for. He's got 20 people working under them, under him. He's a, you know, sub-manager. He's got 20 people working under him. He's got to know what those 20 people are doing. Otherwise, he's not doing his job. And someone is in charge of 20,000 people, including him. And he's got to know what 20,000 people are doing. You go higher and higher up. You have to have more and more intelligence.
So in the same way, is there some demigod who's responsible to get me to the center at the moment, who said, okay, at this time this person should go there and listen to this lecture? I mean, is it a higher intelligence which is promoting me to come here, or is it my own, of my own accord that I come here?
Well, it's a combination. But it's not karma. Activity in spiritual activity is not controlled by karma. It is controlled, or let's say encouraged, by Krishna's spiritual energies. His divine energies, not material energies, but spiritual energies. You know, who reside in the spiritual world. There are agents there who are assisting us and guiding us in our devotional service. But it's not mechanical and it's not forced. So it also involves our free choice. You know, it's a combination. We have desire, but we don't have the capacity to fulfill that desire on our own. We need the help of Krishna's divine energies. We can't, on our own strength, make one millimeter of a movement in devotional service on our own. We need to be facilitated by Krishna's internal energies. But it's not mechanical, it's not forced. It is free choice. You choose to do something in Krishna's service, and his divine energies help you do it and guide you in it.
So it's not the demigods, so it's something spiritual.
No. Well, the demigods, some demigods are also have spiritual roles. Just like someone works a job and he's also a devotee. So some of the demigods are working their jobs. Some of them are also devotees, or they all are devotees to some extent. So those demigods who are pure devotees, they can also be spiritual guides. They can be working on both levels.
It's not wrong to pay obeisance to demigods.
We should. We should offer respect. But giving our worship to them, as if they were, we should offer respect, but we should not deal with them as if they were independent.
But respect them, I would say.
Yes. Yes, we should. We shouldn't, and we certainly shouldn't disrespect. We may be neglectful because we just don't have infinite amount of attention. We only have so much time and so much energy and so much attention. So maybe we don't give enough attention to the demigods. But it's nothing, no insult intended. It's just we're too busy. Too busy serving Krishna to pay attention to all the demigods. And we apologize to them, please, I'm sorry, we didn't mean any offense. But I'm just too busy.
I have a question in this regard.
Yes.
Suppose like our family members, you know, like our ancestors were worshipping some demigods.
Yes.
Like Ganapati, Ganesha and all this.
Yes. So
let's say the family altar does contain all these demigods and Krishna is also there. Is it necessary to discard all these demigods just because you have become a Krishna devotee or a Krishna conscious person? I mean, is it necessary to discard all these demigods? Not respect them anymore.
Well, the worship should go to Krishna.
Yes.
So you may have some extra people sitting on the altar, but you should actually perform your worship for Krishna.
Krishna.
Yeah. We shouldn't include demigods in our puja normally. You know, there's certain associates of the Lord who are also made offerings to, but according to the Vaishnav method. Now, we shouldn't do the ordinary demigod worship. We shouldn't offer food directly to the demigods. They get Krishna's remnants. They, you know, and therefore, when we go visit a demigod temple, We normally should not take the prasadam because it's not been offered to Krishna. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. Jai Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra.
So you don't have to clear the altar, but if nobody in your family objects, you might. You might just make it, you know, make it a standard, you know, Gaudiya Vaishnava altar. Lord Chaitanya worshipped. We worship Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya worshipped Radha Krishna. He worshipped Jagannath. He worshipped Lord Nrisimha. These are our deities. We generally don't put other deities on our altars. So to make a standard altar in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you may have Radha Krishna, you may have Lord Gornitai, you may have Jagannath, you may have a picture of Nrisimhadeva, and that's about it. We don't worship, even other forms of Vishnu we don't usually put on our altars. We don't see in ISKCON temples or Gaudiya Math. It's just not the style. At home, you may have your ancient family altar that's been there for generations. So you don't have to change it. But if you want to be, have an altar that's actually in line with our sampradaya, then you could. As long as it doesn't, make a new altar. Leave the old one and make a new one. Yeah, maybe that's the best thing. But you don't have to, if the family members are attached to the old tradition of the family, you don't have to make a disturbance. But you yourself, those especially those who are initiated or aiming at initiation, their worship should be of the same deities that Prabhupada worshipped, that Lord Chaitanya worshipped. Okay? There's no great harm in having someone's picture on the altar or even an extra murti, but we don't worship them.
Yes, yes.
What is the quality of a Brahmana?
That's a big question. There are many qualities. Krishna describes in the Gita, they're described in the Bhagavatam in various places. I think you got to be more specific because there's so many different qualities of Brahmana and Kshatriya.
A Brahmana, generally, put it in simple terms, a Brahmana is someone who is living a simple life in the mode of goodness. And a real Brahmana is someone who understands the absolute truth. Whereas a devotee is someone who not only lives in the mode of goodness, but he lives his life for the service of God. That is a devotee. And he knows not only the absolute truth, he knows the absolute truth as the supreme person. That's the basic difference between a Brahman and a devotee. But there are so many other things that involves. But that can't be answered simply. That would take books. You have to fill up several books to explain the difference between a devotee and a Brahmana. What are the qualities of devotee? What are qualities of Brahman? You can see Krishna talks about them in the Bhagavad Gita. But he goes on for 3-4 chapters explaining these things in the Bhagavad Gita. Many, many different qualities of a devotee and qualities of a Brahman. Okay. Yes.
You said the Brahmana can have wives from other levels also.
Well, this is Nambudari Brahmanas in Kerala. That's their community.
Yes.
Other communities don't allow polygamy.
So it's not sanctioned in the Shastras.
You mean sanction forbidden or sanction allowed?
Allowed.
It's theoretically allowed. A woman should not normally have more than one wife, more than one husband. That's very abnormal. But it's allowable for a man to have more than one wife if he can support the wives and keep them happy. But Prabhupada said, yes, that's true. And he even encouraged it in the beginning, but then he realized that it's not practical in the modern times. If we practice polygamy in ISKCON, it will be scandalous, and in most countries in the world, it won't be acceptable. So therefore, Prabhupada, after some thought and discussion, decided not to allow polygamy in ISKCON.
And so if that happens, if a Brahmana has married a woman from the lower level, then will she also be addressed as Brahmani, the position of mother? Will she also be addressed as Brahmani, wife of a Brahmana?
Well, she is the wife of a Brahmana, but she'll be understood if she's not a Brahmana, if she's, you know, from a Kshatriya family. That will also be understood. But she's Brahmani because a woman actually takes the social position of her husband. The woman's varna is actually defined by her husband's varna. Just like a child, although maybe born in a certain varna, he only attains to that varna actually when he gets samskara, upanayanam. Janmana jayate shudraha samskaredhi pavedvijaha. You're born a shudra and you become brahmana only by upanayanam and by the other samskaras. So similarly, a woman doesn't have any class until she marries and she gets the jati or the varna of her husband. Okay.
And regarding births, like you said, Brahmana takes 100 births if he executes everything perfectly.
Yes.
Then for doing it, he becomes qualified to become Brahma.
Yes.
So that means activities of previous life give one more than some facility. Just like many times we say that a doctor's son is not a doctor because he is born there, but the only facility that he has is maybe he sees some medical books and he's...
Well, the thing is, it's not accidental that he's born in a Brahmin in a doctor family. Maybe it's his fate to also become a doctor. Because he probably was a doctor in his previous life. You know, because he had a great attachment to medicine. The practice of medicine, he was doing it maybe for several lifetimes. So therefore he's born in a doctor's family. It's not just coincidence. So there's more to it than just a coincidental association with doctors because you're in the doctor family. You were born in that family for good reason. Because you're a doctor, you've been a doctor for lifetimes, and you're just a doctor at heart.
So there's more afforded to him just than some conducive environment to
become a doctor. When the Varnashram system is being followed properly, then it has that potency. When everything is mixed up and people are not pure anything, they're all mixed up Varna Sankara, then there's no potency in it. There's no advantage in any birth because all the births are corrupted anyway. But when you have pure, when the genes are kept pure, yeah, then there's potency in the birth you take. But nowadays, it doesn't make any difference. There's no great advantage in being born as a so-called Brahmana. No great advantage. Except for in very rare families. You know, there may be some families where they actually maintain the cultural potency, but it's rare. Very rare. Like so much corruption that there's not much potency in so-called good birth. There may be material advantage. You're born in a powerful political family, you know, politicians. You're likely to also get involved in politics. But that's material advantage. That's not fair. You know, it doesn't mean you actually deserve anything. You know, I mean, you know, it's a corrupt system, a modern social system, that people take unfair advantage of their birth. Hare Krishna. Okay, thank you. Oh, yes.
Regarding this verse, we are seeing that now in this present age, Kali Yuga, there's definitely some unwanted population because there is lots of corruption.
Most of the population.
So, does it imply that Krishna is responsible for this unwanted population now?
No. Krishna is being humble. He's accepting the blame on himself. But really, it's because we want it.
Yes.
You know? We want to enjoy corruption. If there isn't corruption, then we can't enjoy sense gratification. If we all stay pure, then we're not going to have any fun. You know, so to enjoy sense gratification, we want to become corrupted. Krishna is just giving us what we want. If he says it's his fault, that's nice for him to say that, but it's just as much our fault, if not more.
Suppose somebody was to put this question to us and say, on the basis of this
statement,
why are we not responsible, Krishna is responsible, how do we interact with such a person?
No, but he's making a contrary to fact statement. It's, if I didn't do my duty, then I would be the cause. But he's not. He is doing his duty. He says it. Varta eva chakarmani. I am maintaining religious principles. And then he said, if I didn't do that, then I would be the cause of Varna Sankara. He's not saying, I don't do it, and therefore I am the cause. That's what we call a conditional or contrary to fact statement. He doesn't actually do that. So somebody else is the cause nowadays. Because Krishna does obey the religious principles. So it's not his fault. It's somebody, you know, if we see Varna Sankara, it's coming from somewhere else. It's not Krishna's fault. You know, because Krishna danced with other men's wives, therefore we have Varna Sankara. No, forget that. Krishna never did anything irreligious. You know, we don't understand how it's religious, but it's the highest righteousness, what Krishna does. Even as dancing with other men's wives. No fault is created by that. We were explaining that in the beginning. That's when there's bad mixture. When the man and woman are not compatible. Mostly because the woman is higher than the man. That's not right. The man should be higher than the woman. Okay, then you have bad mixture. Instead of one cup of sugar and half a teaspoon of cinnamon, you have one cup of cinnamon and half a teaspoon of sugar. That's not good. It will not make a good, you know, payasam will not be good. If you use, can you do that? One cup of cinnamon and half a teaspoon of sugar and you'll make nice payasam? So like that, bad mixture. That's Varna Sankara. Okay, not compatible. Okay, that's what we have. Incompatible. And nobody's been purified. No attempt at purification. Just corruption. Okay. Yes.
Last question.
Yes.
You said that a devotee has a quality, I mean the main qualification of a devotee, that he knows the absolute truth.
Oh, that's Brahmana.
Yeah.
Brahmajanati Brahmana. Yes. A devotee should know the absolute truth as a person.
Yeah.
Then he's a devotee.
Is there a difference between knowing the absolute truth and realizing, I mean we say self-realizing, the word comes in the Gita.
No, well there are different levels. There's theoretical knowledge. Then there's realization, and then even beyond that, having an intimate personal relationship.
So there are different levels.
Different levels, many different levels. So there are brahmanas, there are devotees, and then there's better devotees, and then there's best devotees, and then there's super best devotees. Yeah, there's many different degrees of devotees.
So devotees just know the absolute truth. I mean, they just
that's the minimum. You should have at least theoretical understanding that the supreme is, there's one supreme truth, and that truth is a person. And his name is Krishna, or if you like, Narayana, or some other name, but you have a personal idea. Then you're a devotee.
So realization is on a higher level than just knowing the absolute.
Yeah, knowing theoretically is the lowest. It's the lowest, you know, the minimum. Okay. That's entry level, devotee. Okay. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.